Welcome to the Radio Internet Story Exchange podcast, a 15-minute excerpt of a 58-minute RISE public affairs program. I'm your host and producer, Kelly Romaris. Today's podcast is called Electronic Voting, A Danger to Democracy. It's a portion of an August 2006 RISE interview with Pokey Anderson, an investigative reporter in Houston, Texas, who has been looking into voting issues for over 3.5 years.
For most of us, we kind of weren't paying attention, and then after the Chad-ridden Florida 2000 debacle, all of a sudden Congress said, well, we got to do something, and this whole idea about electronic voting hit Congress. And Congress in 2002, I believe, passed the Help America Vote Act and authorized $3.9 billion for states and localities to buy new equipment. And this electronic method of voting kind of happened on the scene just at that time. There's been a stampede ever since to get that stuff rolled out and into voting places.
Why would people think that somehow using computers would be a better way to vote than using some other paper method if you thought Chads were a problem?
You know, it seemed like it was just presented as a solution before there was a whole lot of testing or verifying that this was really a grand idea. And, you know, once people started really thinking about it, especially people in security and computer scientists, they started thinking about the whole application. There were a lot of questions because the anonymity of voting presents a unique problem for any kind of a computer tabulation system, because the voter and their vote become separated once the voter leaves the voting place. You know, if you do a transaction with a bank, there may be a picture of you at the teller or at the ATM. You know, you get a paper receipt right then, you get a monthly report. There's all these ways that things can be checked. But once you leave the voting place, your vote is conglomerated with other people's votes, and you really have no way of knowing if what you tapped on the machine got to where it was going. So it's taken me a while to understand how unique voting is as an application, but very smart people who study this kind of thing have explained it to me numerous times, and it is a very difficult problem for a computer. Even if the computer works perfectly, it's a security nightmare.
Is it, though, really different from trying to steal elections in the past? I mean, we have the phrase stuffing the ballot box, Chicago vote early, vote often. Why is this different?
It's true that there's a long and sordid history of vote stealing, election stealing in the United States and probably anywhere. There's a book by Andrew Gumbel called Steal This Vote, and there's just method after method after method. My favorite one was one about 100-some years ago when they'd hire a guy with a full beard, full facial hair to vote in the morning, and then he'd go back with just a mustache later, and then he'd go back clean-shaven again. You know, he'd have like four different variations of facial hair and get to vote four times. Well, that's pretty labor-intensive, just, you know, to have one person get four votes. The thing that's changed now is when you install one kind of electronic paperless equipment in a state, for instance, Georgia or Maryland has all default DREs, all electronic, no paper. If somebody's on the inside, or even a clever outsider, it's possible to have one or a few people steal an entire state's election. This is not something I made up. This is a computer scientist telling me this.
And how easy would it be to get one or two people on the inside?
You know, there's a lot of inside attack points. One of the problems with an electronic voting machine is it's not like a paper and a pencil. You know, I can have a stack of paper here. It won't make any difference. It doesn't matter until somebody votes on it, you know, at the voting place. But an electronic piece of voting equipment is almost like live ballots from the time the software engineer develops it to when it's manufactured and put together to when it's warehoused, when it's trucked. we have evidence here in Harris County, Texas, and also there's evidence in the San Diego area, there were in California, and other places that election workers are taking these machines home with them. So you could have an insider there. I mean, there's just all kinds of places for an insider for months in advance of an election to get some kind of access to this equipment. The great majority of election workers work really hard to do a good job. You know, I mean, when I go to my voting place, I know my precinct chair and, you know, I trust them and all that. But it doesn't take much. You know, the precinct person or even higher up can't even tell in an electronic election if it's working or not. How do they know? They can't tell. It's not humanly observable what's going on inside that box. And so they can do all the procedures, but they can't really guarantee anything. In the old days, with paper ballots in front of your face, if you keep everything under human eyes and a good chain of custody, you can get a clean election.
When you talk about stealing a whole state, can you give an example of how that could be done with just a few people?
A fellow named Harri Hursti is a Finnish computer scientist who's been working with Bev Harris at blackboxvoting.org. And Harri, along with another computer scientist, Herbert Thompson, they've both been looking at Diebold equipment. They checked in Leon County, Florida, at the request of the election official there, Ian Sancho. They went, and he said, you know what, I want to make sure this stuff works. This is optical scan. That's the paper ballot that you fill in a little oval, kind of like an SAT, and then it's read through a counter. He said, I want to see if this stuff works. So these fellas went, and without any passwords, you know, they just went over there, and on several different occasions, within minutes, they hacked a test election right in front of the election official. And, you know, kind of set him back on his heels. I talked to Ian Sancho after that, and I said, well, what, you know, what did you think? And he said, well, I was kind of surprised. And then Harri Hursti followed that up later with a test in Utah. And this was not optical scan, but a DRE, you know, the electronic paperless equipment of Diebold. And this time it was even worse. What he discovered on that occasion was that not only could you just hack a live election, you could go to the most fundamental basis of the software in that computer and change it to the point of, if somebody came later and tried to clean it out, they couldn't. You could change the very foundation of what was in there, and you could actually steal future elections. And then since then, the Open Voting Consortium found yet another vulnerability on Diebold equipment. This was an earlier version of their electronic equipment called the TS. In that case, the motherboard, the inside, the guts of the machines, had a little printing on it next to switches. So if you open up the computer with a screwdriver, you've got some switches marked there, and if you turn one switch, you can make the machine forget its original programming, and you could boot the machine up with a flash drive, which you could put in your pocket. Those are little things people carry around in their keychain. You could totally change the computer's mind by putting in a flash drive, make it forget everything it ever knew. One switch. As I wrote in my recent article, I said a glitch here and a glitch there. Pretty soon you've got a whole country whose leaders are unelected, unhinged from the people, reality challenged, and ethically challenged.
What can someone do? So you had the Hursti hack occurring in front of the election official.
Right.
What did Mr. Sancho do besides be shocked?
Well, he said, okay, we're not using this stuff. And then he was attacked by people under Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida. They tried to boot him out of office, even though he's been in office for, I don't know, 18 years or something. Popular guy. It's not easy. Bruce Funk was the official in Utah who allowed the test, and he also was attacked by other people. There is a definite undercurrent here where truth tellers are getting attacked. I don't think the media has done a very good job at taking on this whole topic either.
Who benefits by having things the way they are with e-voting?
Well, that's a really good question. The incumbents. The incumbents and the people who like having them there, the people who are getting the financial benefits of having various kinds of government contracts funneled to them would certainly benefit. Actually, the big media are set up to benefit, too. Some people say that the reason they've been so compliant and such sweeping dogs is that they're sitting around waiting for even more consolidation in telecommunications industry, and that they think they can get it from this administration. So they don't want to rock the boat.
What does a voter-verified paper trail mean, and what does that do?
Well, there are a lot of people who have been getting behind this idea, which is legislation by Rush Holt in Congress. Say it's the paper trail bill. And the idea is to take electronic voting systems and attach a printer, and then the voter looks at the printed out version of their vote, checks it, and then basically you have dual election records. You have an electronic record and you have a paper record. There's a lot of devils in the details on this, because in some cases that paper record, the voter's not even looking at it. In some cases, we've discovered, actually Brad Blog discovered this, that there's a cover over that paper printer. Some of these have been installed already. And that this cover, you can't even see through. You could maybe lift it if you knew to lift it. But there's some evidence that the poll workers were saying, oh, don't worry about that. So this is a very tiny detail. It's like, there's a cover over the paper record. Hey, how are you supposed to check it if you don't even know it's there? And then other details, like in Florida, under Governor Jeb Bush, they passed a law that says you can't do paper recounts. Just can't do it. It's crazy.
How deeply rooted do you think electronic voting is in the United States now? Are we too late to kind of rip it out of the system entirely?
People want you to think it's too late. They say it's a done deal. It's all over the country now. There's nothing you can do about it. We've paid too much money for it. That's one of the things they'll say. And, you know, even if states and localities paid more than the $3.9 billion that was authorized by Congress, and they probably have, that's irrelevant. Now, I can't write you a check for $4 billion myself, but in the scheme of things, they'll argue cost, but it's got nothing to do with that. There's really, really big money in lobbying, in elections, in campaign money, and the money that's been spent on electronic voting is peanuts compared to that big money. I mean, the number of lobbyists in Congress trying to get influence is something like 68 lobbyists per member of Congress, full-time in their lobbying, trying to get influence. Well, if you could get influence without even having a lobbyist, if you could just steal elections, gosh, wouldn't that be the thing? We need to have the best, most secure, most transparent, most humanly observable, fair, honest election. It's that simple. And if electronic machinery owned by corporations, non-transparent, uncheckable, unrecountable, with secret proprietary software, easily hackable, and just sometimes plain wrong, if that stuff can't do the job, then it needs to be in a plastic recycling bin.
You've been listening to the Radio Internet Story Exchange podcast, Electronic Voting, A Danger to Democracy, featuring investigative reporter Pokey Anderson. You can learn how to obtain the full 58-minute RISE program, Electronic Voting, A Danger to Democracy, and other RISE programs by visiting the Radio Internet Story Exchange website at rise4news.net. That's RISE, the number 4, news.net. I'm the RISE host and producer, Kelia Ramirez. My email address is kelia@rise4news.net. That's K-E-L-L-I-A @rise4news.net. This is the Radio Internet Story Exchange podcast. Thanks for listening.